Hello, and welcome back to the Why You Know Doctor podcast. This is where we share stories from Asian leaders to empower and inspire the next generation. My name is Dominic, and I'm the host of this show. So my guest today is John Victoria. He's the owner of his own SEO agency called Pollyanna. I met John when I was giving a talk at a conference for the organization ACE Next Gen, which is a group of Asian entrepreneurs that are part of this community, and I was helping consult many people on how to grow their company better digitally and online. So John, of course, reached out and I offered to give him a bit of one-on-one advice about how to really scale his agency, how to achieve some of his dreams of being able to work and travel at the same time, similar to what I had done when I was first starting out. So anyways, in this episode, we're going to talk a little bit about entrepreneurship. We're going to talk about what it takes to scale an agency, some advice that I have for him that I think is applicable to many other people out there as well, a little bit about traveling and some other things. So without further ado, here's John.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Sheldon. And thanks for answering my questions.
Yeah, of course. So, I guess first off, I'll start with, so John sent me over this list of like 10 questions, which I thought were really good. But I think to answer some of these questions, and we can post them also as a supplementary to this podcast, like a summary, but just starting out, I'd just love to know a little bit more about just the agency, the specifics, where you guys are at, what are you trying to get to? What are your goals for the short term and long term?
Yeah, so for us right now, we are a local SEO agency. Been the same way since 2016. Right now, we have a team of a size of around 10. And all my team, my operations team, they're based in the Philippines. And then we also have three folks who are on the sales side and they're US based. And so right now we have around, I think it's around 12, 13 clients, all on monthly retainers. And, when we first started, it was just a bunch of different industries. Like it was, e-commerce, then there was, some people who were chiropractors, dentists, just a whole bunch of industries. But one of the things we found out was one of our top clients, they're in the HVAC space, mechanical services. From 2017 to 2020, we worked together and we're still working together. And they grew from a $1 million to a $10 million company. And so for us right now, we figured that, hey, we got this great case study, mechanical services, they pay really well. So we want to, plant our flag in a specific industry and grow. So right now where we're standing is that we have the operations team. We got great SOPs in place. Like for me, like on a day-to-day basis, I'm usually not even implementing the SEO anymore because the team's taking care of it. And so right now, my big focus is just how do we reach more mechanical service providers? And we've been doing a lot of cold calling. Our company, it's still pretty small. Last year, I think we just did 300,000 in revenue. And I think this year we'll definitely break it. I think we're going to break 500,000, maybe 600,000 this year, but we're not where we want to be. By the end of this year, I'm hoping that we can get to be $1 million company. And then hopefully my dream vision for where I'm trying to go is to potentially sell the agency one day. So I don't know if that's going to be, in the near future or whether that's 10 years from now, who knows? But my dream is to set up the company so that it runs on its own. And it's also very valuable to a buyer. So I have the option just in case. So, that's currently where we're at, the team size. And yeah, that's our goals right now.
Cool. That makes a lot of sense. And that definitely helps me kind of cater some of the responses to some of your questions, knowing that you're building it to sell. Or hopefully that, right? I mean, because ultimately that's going to mean you're going to really want to create a heavy, you want to create as much independence from you tied to sales, tied to implementation and execution as possible. Otherwise, when you do sell, you're going to get the golden handcuffs. So you're going to be essentially just working for someone else for a number of years.
Exactly.
Okay, cool. Do you just want to go through some of your questions maybe, and then I can answer them with, your kind of knowing your goals in mind, and probably for some of these questions, I'll get some more context as well from you to understand what you're looking to get out of it,
Yeah, for sure. So, I think the first question I want to ask you was just, understanding your life as a digital marketing agency owner, just because I relate to you so much, because I think, you know, we're both in our 20s. We both started in SEO. And I think that the way that you live your life is very similar to how I want to also live my life and grow my agency one day. So I'm curious, like right now, like how are you balancing personal and professional life? Like how do you, you know, build the company of your dreams and the thing that you're really passionate about while at the same time doing all those personal things as well? Because I don't know, I found some difficulty trying to balance both of them.
Yeah, I think in the beginning, up until a point where you're very sustainable, it's hard to have like your hands in too many like baskets or whatever the expression is. It's like for a long time, I was trying to do, you know, multiple things. I was trying to do acting. I was trying to do a lot of commercial work. And then working in the entertainment industry in addition to growing the agency. And at some point, I just realized that I have to really narrow down and focus on, I just had to put my energy towards one thing to at least in the beginning phase of growing an agency, because your mind and your just emotional energy is so vested constantly in that. Like one thing is going to take priority, or you risk like both things not going well. So in my opinion, I think at least how it panned out for me is the second I decided just to go all in. Pretty much one day I just realized, I was like, if I went all in with this business for the next year or two and grinded it out, like I am quite confident that I can build something that's like really sustainable. But it's all getting to the point of sustainability and just takes a lot of hours. It just takes manpower and working smart, but also working really hard to get there. Does that make sense?
That makes sense. And was there a certain, for you, like going all in, like was there a certain number you were looking to hit before it was more of a, I can take a step back? Or was it just like a time frame saying, oh, these next year or 2 years? Like, did you have a specific goal you're trying to hit?
There wasn't really a specific goal. I've always made like revenue goals, and we've surpassed and grown way past those revenue goals. I mean, the first one was like 500K, and then it was 1 million, and then it was like 3 million, and then it was like 5 million. So like we've continued to surpass all of our revenue goals. But like, I think at some point you just realize it's like, you know, and it's something I only started to realize really in the last year or like year and a half. I don't really need to make any more money. So now I'm just trading my time to like play video games versus like working on another client. And if I'm not enjoying the work, like I really don't need to make the extra money. And sometimes it's hard to turn that down, because it's like, you know, we might do a deal that's $500,000, but if I'm not interested in it anymore, or just like we're really busy, it's like I don't feel the need to have to take that business on if it's not something that we just don't need the revenue. You know, but I think it'd be a different story if we did need the revenue, or if we were owned by like another company that was, you know, pushing a harder, a bigger revenue goal. But at the end of the day, as a sole owner, you set what you want as a revenue goal. And for me, it's like, I just want to continue to keep the team lean, agile, do really, really great projects that we're all really interested in, but not like, you know, stress myself out to the point where I can't do anything else, where I'm just like not even sleeping, because that's, in my opinion, not the way I want to live my life. You know, you can't do everything just for money. And I think at a point it's diminishing returns.
I see.
So it's hard to answer that question in terms of like the goal, like when is enough. I think at some point you just have to think about like once it's sustainable, meaning like, can you, one thing I did recently was I just took a vacation for like 2 weeks and I tried to do as little as possible. And by doing that, it allowed me to kind of see where the weak areas are and where I need to like supplement with like new hires or better processes. Mm. But, you know, it takes a little bit of time to get there, I think.
I love that. Have you read the book Clockwork?
No, I haven't read that book. What's it about?
It reminds me exactly what you just said. So one of the exercises in the book is to take a step back from your business for a week, 2 weeks, a month. And the purpose of that is to see, is, you know, can your business actually run without you? And in the book, they talk about ways to identify, you know, how do you build those processes, and you know, where do you need to supplement? And so it just reminded me what you just said of that book. So I was just curious if you had read that.
Yeah. But, so I would say that's the main thing to like balance your personal life with professional life is everyone has different degrees of how much they can handle too. Like, you know, but over the last few years, it's like personal life has become more and more important with like relationship with family. You know, as my parents are getting older, as I'm getting older, it's like, you know, I just want to have more personal time. Personal time doesn't necessarily mean like sitting at home and doing nothing and just playing video games. Sometimes yeah. you want to do that too. You know, it's nice to be able to do that. But also, like, it might just be like reading books. Like, I'm reading, like, I just started like a behemoth of a series, which is called the like History of Civilization, which is like 11 volumes of like 1,000 pages each. You know, so just other things too.
That's awesome. And for you, so it sounds like you're in a really nice spot right now in terms of having the personal freedom to do what you want and the professional success as well. And so, like for you, like what does, I don't know, what does success look like for you in the next 3 to 5 years? Or do you see yourself still running the agency? Do you see yourself doing something else? Like, you know, what's that picture look like?
I think there's kind of like a time where any agency owner, unless you start to change things up, you're going to get a bit burnt out. You know, you just don't want to be doing the same thing. After 5 years, usually I think that's one of the first major burnout phases that I've heard from other people as well. So I don't know what year you're in now, but at some point, you know, after you do the same things, like you probably will get a little burnt out. So you want to dabble in a few different other things. So personally for me is like the goal with Supreme is, you know, we have no intention to sell right now. We're doing great. And I've been able to remove myself from a lot of the day-to-day processes. You know, definitely I'm still like, a key part of the company, and I have to spend a lot of time still more than I actually want to. But you know, I think right now it's like we just want to deliver as much value as possible. Like the bottom line is we want to deliver as much value as possible to the clients that we work with. But otherwise, you know, just spending the time on other personal goals, whether it be the podcast, whether it just be like sometimes it's nice just to do nothing because that allows you to be bored to figure out other things that you want to do that you're interested in, you know.
Gotcha. And in terms of the stuff that you're involved in now in the company, like what does that look like? Is it strategy work? You know, I guess taking sales calls, like what still requires you right now that's taking up the time?
Generally, the hardest thing to outsource is business development and sales. that you probably will know what you guys are capable of better than anyone else. You're better. You know better if you're not capable of something, is it something that you can sell and you probably would be capable of it? You know, you're offering your value proposition, how to sell yourself probably the most than anyone else. And also you care about the deals usually more than others, right? So that's going to be the last part that I need to be able to remove myself from. I think operations, generally you can find someone else to run ops, build your processes. You need to hire good people. Probably the first step, you know, it's just hiring the right people. You have to have a really good process to hire people because that makes or breaks the company. But yeah, I don't know if that answered the question actually. What was
no.
it?
No, that makes sense. I mean, I was just asking like, what are the things you're involved on a daily basis? And you
right,
said
so I think
BD
sales.
And sales.
Okay. Yeah. And that led me to like thinking about like kind of what you were saying earlier is like you're building out this outbound sales team, cold calls. Does that work? Like how's that been going for you?
It's been, so I've seen it work in other agencies. There's another SEO agency I'm following and I know the founders and they've grown their SEO agency. They actually started from scratch. They went from zero to, I think they're around 40K a month right now. And they were just doing outbound sales. And one of the founders used to work for web.com for, I think it was like 3 or 4 years and was their top salesperson. Okay. So he also has that benefit on his side. But for us personally, it's been tough. We have a lot of people who burn out, people who just don't even get to doing the calls, people who, you know, I don't know, they just don't sound good on the phone. So for us, it's been tough, like finding the right people and then retaining them. So, it's been interesting. So do you have recommendations for like hiring or books or things to look into?
Well, I mean, I think it just goes back to, I think business development and sales is the hardest thing to outsource. I think you can have other people maybe help with lead generation or marketing, but when it comes to the sale, like that's as bottom of the funnel as it gets. That is maybe the best use of your time at this point is like selling because, you know, if the goal is revenue, that's literally as close as you're going to get to the revenue. And I just don't think it's going to be hard to find someone that's going to be better than you at that, at this stage. Especially as an agency, if your offering is constantly evolving or it's like, you know, changing a bit. Also, you learn a lot about the audience, about the areas that you're weak in based off of those conversations. It's an amazing data point to understand kind of where your weak spots are, to be on those calls and interfacing with, you know, within for sales.
I love
So I think, we've never done the cold call approach. I don't know anything about outbound marketing, really. But I do think that, you know, probably making the right investment and having the right inbound marketing strategy could be beneficial. And then maybe a little bit of supplementary like paid advertising on like LinkedIn for specific companies that are in the sector that you're trying to target, like targeting marketing directors of your specific like, you know, area, I think might also be a really good idea because it's highly targeted and not that expensive.
I love that.
Once you get the leads, then I think it's probably best at this point. Like, you're not going to have crazy volume. I think it's a good use of your time to just take those calls.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, it all starts with revenue. If you don't have revenue, you're not going to be able to hire better people. You're not going to be able to, like, you know, be sustainable. So I just think that's a good use of your time.
Okay.
You also, yeah.
Sorry. No, I was just curious, like for the revenue goal. So, you know, last year I was at 300. So like when you're in my position, like if you were me, like I don't know what you'd say, like, hey, John, you should try to just go for 1 million. And until then just keep on focusing on sales and just gunning for that. Or like, would you have any advice on that? Or because I mean, it's nice right now, but I don't know. I feel like I have so much energy to continue driving this agency. I just want to have like, this is like the thing I'm trying to hit. I don't know.
Yeah. I think a million goal is good because going from 0 to 1 million is the hardest. It's easier to go from 1 to 2 million. It's way easier to go from 2 to 3 million. I mean, like that, then 0 to 1, just cause like from 0 to 1, you have to build every process. You have to build every process. Yeah. And like the snowball is just like, you gotta start rolling it. Once you're rolling it and it's rolling, it's like, it just gets bigger and bigger. It's like, we didn't really do much to like, in terms of more BD or anything, to go from like 2 to 3 million, 2 to 4 million, like 3 to 5 million. Like actually just everything just got easier. Like we just charged more, the clients got easier, we got worked with better clients, the clients referred. And you know, a big company, when you know, you have a big deal with them, then they're like, oh, we have this other project for another company that we're a subsidiary or partner of. Like, can you help with that? We're like, sure. And they're like, oh, here's the scope. They're like, okay, that's 200K or 100K. They're like, okay, let's get a PO open. So it just becomes so fast. You know, you close deals, like you can't even keep up and then you have people that you worked with a year ago where they got more funding, they reach out to you and they're like, hey, we want to re-engage. And I'm like, okay, it's like 3K a month, 5K a month for X, Y, and Z once we know what our services are. And then, at this point, it's kind of like, we're not even maximizing our growth. Like we could easily double again. We could double to a $10 million agency, like very easily, I bet. But it's just a matter of like, do you want to do that, right? Like it's a whole nother game. You have to build out more processes, hire more people. And so, but I think 0 to 1 is good. And then from there, you'll probably grow to 2. If you have energy, you'll grow even bigger. And at some point you might just be like, okay, enough is enough. Like I've made enough money. Maybe I just want to like focus on some other stuff. And then you start to hire, make a little bit less, but hire other people that are really good. You know, take the time, take a year, test multiple people, you know, find the right people. You have to test people before you hire them.
Okay, test the right people.
And do some hourly contracts and have people prove themselves. Give them a test project, a small project. You'll be able to figure out if someone's really good pretty quickly.
I love that. Yeah, because they don't want to invest too much time in training and education to someone.
The biggest waste of time.
Fizzle out.
Yeah. That's why recruiters make so much money. Because, you know, and another thing is usually the best people are employed. It's not easy. Hiring is not easy. I think I would, if I were you, read some books on hiring. Learn as much about hiring as you can. It's going to be one of the most important things for you to grow the company.
Okay. Do you have a top book that you recommend on hiring?
I don't have a top book. Because I historically, in the beginning, wasn't very good at hiring. I got lucky. I got really lucky hiring people that I knew, that, you know, I mean, it's not pure luck. It's just like, I tried to find people that maybe were underqualified at the time, but were passionate and eager to learn and smart and reliable and trustworthy. It's like, because that's how you're going to get the best talent. Like, if you hire someone that's already super overqualified, like a super amazing A player, plus like all this experience, it's like you're going to have to pay way more than you can afford, or you're going to have to give up equity. Or you hire someone that's amazing, but not a team player, and it's going to be a toxic person for your company. Or you hire, or you're not going to hire someone that has no skill and not a team player. So really the only thing you're left with is hiring someone that's a really great team player, really smart and intelligent, but doesn't really have the skill sets yet, but is willing to take the time, 3 months to 6 months to 9 months, to really grow, develop the skill sets, wear multiple hats, and improve. And that's really the only way that I see it working, unless you had more investment.
Okay.
Which once again is like, it's a different story. You know, it's not a bootstrapped approach.
I see. So for you, when you went from zero to one, was it choosing the right people, you'd say, was the most important thing? Was it, I don't know if you were always a niche agency, was that the decision that got you to 0 to 1 million? Or I'm just curious more as your journey, like what were those ingredients you felt made you get to that first, you know, the difficult one?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think the most important thing is I had a constant source of leads, which was good, which allowed me to constantly practice on sales and close deals. So the constant source of leads came from me just having a website where I did really good SEO. I specialized in my industry and, you know, some keywords. I had literally 10 searches a month, 20 searches a month, but, you know, I ranked pretty well for them. And then just targeting that industry. And then I could practice a lot doing sales calls. In those sales calls, I learned about areas that I was lacking, meaning like companies would be like, well, do you do like this, X, Y, and Z? Do you have that? Do you have, you know, whatever, because they've been talking to other people. And like, you know, if I didn't have it, I didn't have it. And I would realize that I would realize what's preventing me from closing the deal. And that gave me really good data points and to figure out like, how do I build the offerings? So the most important thing is, you know, I think you need to figure out a stable source of leads. And I think you need to practice getting good at closing deals. And then you have to find the energy to, you know, build up some offerings and figure out where you're weak. Now, after that, I think it is important to have good partners. I have some really good partners at Supreme. I wouldn't have been able to do that unless I could rely on other people. In the beginning, honestly, it was rocky too. Like, you know, some of the partners, once again, you take a risk of hiring someone that's raw, right? Like maybe they don't have that much experience. Like I know my chief marketing officer, he was very passionate, but both of us were very raw in terms of skill. But the thing is, he read like every single book on marketing, and over time he innovated and grew and, you know, was open to feedback, as was I. And grew together. Same goes with another one of my business partners, Eric. You know, it's like, at some point you probably want to have someone help you. And, you know, you can always figure out a rev share model. You know, like let's say you guys grow. You don't have to give equity, but you can give like a percentage of revenue or like revenue of certain projects. You know, let's say you close a certain deal. That person, for helping to close the deal, gets 5% of the revenue for the life of the project or something. Especially if it's going to be a high-level business partner, then... I think that's a good way to approach it.
I love that. So when you began to bring on partners, was within the 0 to 1 range, or was that after?
That was in the 0 to 1 range. I had a few other people on my team that were like pretty solid. Okay. They're raw, but like a good support system, and it's hard to do everything yourself. I think at the 1 million range, it's hard to do it. I think, you know, when you're doing it as a freelancer, I think it's not that hard to like maintain your own clients as a freelancer, make 200K a year. It's not that hard. It's not easy, but it's not impossible. But if you want to grow a company, then I think at some point you need some really good people, that some A players that you can rely on. Mm.
How do you feel like you attracted those people? So you mentioned that you knew them already. So I guess that helped out a lot, but you know, these A players, they have options.
To be honest, well, the A players do have options unless they're an A player that's recently moving into a new field that they don't have that much experience in. For example, someone that, or someone that just is still younger, you know, like 23, early 20s, 24, 25, like, you know, trying to figure out what they want to do, but definitely smart and driven, and have some sort of interest in, let's say, digital marketing, you know. I don't think it's hard to, like, A players don't have to be someone that's extremely overqualified for the position. You can still be an A player, but maybe lack some of the skills and experience. But, you know, as long as that person is willing to always evolve and grow and they're smart.
I love that.
Yeah. So for me, honestly, it was just a network of friends and people, friends of friends and people that I knew in the beginning, and then it started to be like job postings. But in the beginning, really, I just leveraged the network that I had, looked for other people that were possibly interested and I knew were really good or reliable and trustworthy.
Okay.
Yeah. Trust is really important. You'd be working with that person a lot, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm beyond the true, right? Length.
Yeah, integrity is number one. If they don't have that, then I mean, it's real bad. Like, if they have, I forget who said it, but if they have a lot of intelligence and energy, but they lack integrity, then bro, it'll cause some real bad news. Real bad news.
Yeah, exactly. So, but yeah, and that's what I was thinking. You know, I was thinking your outbound sales team. Like, I just don't have experience with an outbound sales team. I don't know how well cold calling works. Maybe it does work. Maybe it doesn't. But for whatever reason, I feel like that money and time should be invested into really good resources and specific targeting to your industry. So whether it's creating a really great case study or white paper for a company, detailing your services, what you did, providing more thoughtful insights on digital marketing for your specific industry, like those things probably will help you more than, and then just like, you know, directly contacting those people. And even if it's cold messaging, you know, on LinkedIn, it can work. Another strategy I did early on, just when I tried to get more leads, was I just added every single marketing director and like BD person and like person within life sciences that I could on LinkedIn. Literally, I just added everyone. <You know? laughs>
I love that. I'm going to do that. Yeah. I'm going to do it for the mechanical services industry. That's awesome.
Yeah, exactly. And then, of course, when you reach out, you're going to know how to be more tactful, how to represent your brand. You're going to, you know, I think you're the best salesperson at the company. So, you know, I made the mistake of putting someone that had a background in sales to help lead sales, and they just sucked. And for a year, it stunted our growth. So like for the year, we closed like 5 deals and I was on every single one of those calls, and everything else, she just like did a terrible job at, because she came from a big company, and big companies, like the leads were already really warm, and like, you know, it's like there was no other, it was just not the right fit. It was just a rookie mistake.
That's really useful to know. Okay.
Anyways, I'm not sold on the outbound sales team, and I'm not sold on that being the best investment unless you guys are really generating revenue from it. If you're generating a break even, then you know it's fine. But like, but there's maybe other things, that other strategies there to grow.
Yeah, I mean, even our numbers right now, they're not looking too hot. So I mean, give you an example of one of our callers. She's doing about 70 calls a day. She connects with about 9 to 10 decision makers in that day. And then if she's lucky, she'll get one appointment set per day. But sometimes it's not even that. So, you know, let's say we have 3 to 5. It's really low numbers.
I don't logically see how that's going to work out. Like, I mean, how it's like there's some man or woman that maybe knows a bit about your business, not that much, cold calling, which is a pretty terrible, difficult job, who... like representing your brand and your services, it's just, it's a hard sell is what I'm going to say. Yeah. It sounds like a very hard sell. Like who even responds to cold callers now, you know?
It's a very small percentage. I'll just give you the data points. Like, we haven't closed any deals from our cold calling just yet. I know other agencies who have, but we just personally haven't experienced it ourselves. So it's been, yeah, it's been quite an energy suck, to say the least.
How did you close your other deals?
I did a lot in person. So I did a lot of in-person networking when I got started. I did BNI, did Chamber of Commerce's. And I think specifically what helped me the most was I connected with referral partners, people who offered complimentary services. And a lot of the deals, they were warm deals because I was referred over by, let's say, a web designer. And they said, oh, John does SEO. So all of our clients have come straight from referrals. I met them in person. Or, you know, one of our clients deferred us again. So it's basically referrals and networking.
Why don't you spend more of your time doing that instead of all the cold calling people? Hire one person that's, you know, has some experience in marketing, but is pretty smart and a people person. Help you scale those channels with referrals, with network, partner networks within the industry. And then you find a little bit more time when you can, when the time is right, to do some in-persons or reach out and provide some referral offers. Like, I just feel like that's a more sustainable strategy. At some point, I just don't think cold calling is sustainable anyways. Even if you do close the deal, like, I just don't really believe in it that much anymore, honestly.
Yeah.
Unless we're selling some things might work, but not, I think it's harder to sell a service where they don't even get to talk to you who runs the company like that early on.
Yeah. And that's been my issue with cold calling. It's because they have to move them from that call to a demo with me. I'll say that we have had some demos happen, and the way that it's happened is after that cold call, I do a short 3 to 5 minute video for that specific prospect, and usually they'll see it, and that's like the reason why they show up to the call. So they do have some form of a touch point, and I guess the caller is more like filtering through, like, do they have any interest? And then I come in, and then I kind of hook them in, and they hop on the call then. But
yeah, they're qualifying them a bit. I just feel like at this point of the company, with the amount of leads that you have, which is not that many, I just think it's something that you should do. Like, the biggest part of selling is the relationship. And biggest part of working with a smaller company is to have that relationship. Think about it, you get referrals because people referred you, because you have a relationship and people trust you. The same as in person, because you're a trustworthy person. When someone talks to you, they believe you. And I just think that, like, that's probably one of your best selling points right now. Honestly, I think you have a good portfolio of some certain things, but I think one of the best selling points is just like you representing your company. You know, you guys are a small shop, but you really care about your clients and to build a relationship. But when you put a third party cold calling person to represent it, it's like already like the person's turned off. It just feels so like this. It just feels kind of, it just loses some of the sensitivity in sales.
I see. Yeah. Cause it's like a brash, like, barging in the door, like, hey, you know, I know you weren't expecting me, but here I am, and here's my thing. Yeah. Buy this.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so from what you said, you're saying that focus more on the relationship-based stuff, and also invest some time into like putting together a white paper, some thoughtful insights on mechanical services industry.
Something that you can promote, like maybe something resourceful, insightful, anything that's like more like original research, benchmarks, industry benchmarks, something that's going to be interesting that other people can't just recreate that easily unless they have some experience.
Okay. Put that down.
Yeah.
It's funny you say that, because that's like been the thing on my back burner for so long. But I guess I have my priorities wrong, because I was like, oh, I should build this cold calling thing first and then build these assets. But it sounds like it's the flip. Build the asset first. Like, that's
build the
that's
asset
gonna be
and
key.
Leads will come. Yeah.
Okay. So I guess another question I had was, I had this on my list, but I think you already answered it. It was just regarding like rest and recovery. So you take like vacations every now and then, I think you just took a 2-week vacation. Do you like do other things, like other practices that help you like stay, you know, like centered and on top of your game?
So the big thing is, I think it all comes down to individuals and how well you can just push yourself. For me, I didn't really take that. I was very good at balancing work life balance for the most part. I'd say better than a lot of people, worse than a lot of people. I'm not like amazing at it, but, in the beginning, I didn't take many vacations, but I was also, you know, on the weekends, I'd find time to enjoy and have fun. I wasn't just working endlessly, but like, you know, I did work really long hours. I took my work super seriously, probably spent more actual hours than most people. But I was just good at balancing my time, managing my time. It wasn't until recently I started to actually, only until like a year ago, started to have a little bit more real vacation time. And even with my last trip, I went to Dominican Republic. I haven't really taken 10 days off where I didn't work besides like Christmas, like, you know, when there's no clients anyways, reaching out for maybe ever, possibly the first time. So it's not like I actually took that many vacations. That being said, I think it is really important to take vacations. I think it's hard in the beginning when every single deal counts, you know, because I just want to reply to the sales, to the lead, and like, as soon as possible. Literally, when we get a lead in the beginning, I would reply so fast that they would think it's an autoresponder. And they you know, because my selling point was like, I care about you guys and I'm here. I'm really reachable. I'm really responsive. People love that, you know, because it's like, and that's really, that was another differentiator. You work with me, like, you know, I was just putting, it felt important, you know. Even now, some of my clients reach out to me, the biggest one that pay me a lot. They reach out to me. I literally respond to them in 30 seconds. They're shocked at how fast I reply because I just want them to know that I'm there for them.
I love that.
But that takes a drain on your personal life. Keep that in mind. And I think for certain things, it's not good to text when you're eating dinner or hanging out with friends. You know, that's it. At some point, you don't want to be on your phone always. So you got to balance it. And so I start doing more and more. Now, you know, whenever I'm having dinner, hang out with friends, I never go on my phone. Try not. But you know, you have to get to that point. And before you get to that point, you got to figure out how to get there.
Yeah. Love that. And I guess personally as well, I mean, are you doing any, that was one of my questions, like, are you doing any dating right now? Like, now that you have more freedom, like, are you going out? Are you meeting folks? Well, I guess COVID is kind of tough to do that, but is that something you're mixing into your life right now or no?
Yeah. I've been pretty much more in relationships than out of relationships over the last few years. You know, it's, I was in a 3-year relationship before the one I'm in now, which is a 2-year relationship. Everything's going really, really amazing. And the reason is because I'm never, you know, in college, it's like, yeah, like I went to a party school, so I went to the bars and stuff. It's like, you know, I had a social life, but like, I was never like, I'm not like the kind of guy that just like, I like to go to a club and like hang out at a club. You know, I've never really been that type of person. I think relationships are great, you know, because when you're in a relationship, you're actually not really that focused on like, just like having to always go out, like go on dates or meet other people. It's like, hopefully you have a really good relationship with someone that supports you. And I think that's a really important aspect of having a successful career is for some people, I don't know, not for everyone. I don't want to speak for everyone, but I think having a support system of really good friends and personal relationship with a significant other is hugely impactful for stress. I also know that if I'm not with my girlfriend, and I'm working, like, I don't know when the cutoff time is. It's like, I would just work. It would be like, I'll literally work until I have a headache, until I have a migraine, until I physically can't stop working anymore. Cause it's like, well, I'd have nothing else to do. I'm just gonna work. But like when I'm in a relationship, like right now, you know, it's like, there's a time when we're gonna have dinner. We're gonna cook dinner and I'm not gonna work. You know, I'm not gonna, you know, so it's a cutoff time. And I think that's really important. You need cutoff times, like the gym. Gym is another cutoff time. I have a CrossFit class I go to, you know, every day. And it's like, that's the cutoff time. So I stop working at that time.
Okay. And is there like the girl you're currently dating, like what qualities, like, would you tell someone to look for? Because I think, not everyone could date an entrepreneur. Not everyone could date someone who's like working a lot. So are there things that you notice that like, hey, like these are qualities that would be good to look for in someone you're looking to date long term?
I think it's kind of hard. I mean, you know, with my relationship right now with Lori, I think in the beginning it was a little bit difficult. Like I did work a lot more. Like she's French, and I think in France, like people tend to even like have a better work-life balance in America. you know, like much better. Like the month of August is like the whole month off for all Europeans, at least in Western Europe. I'm not sure about Eastern Europe, but it's like a vacation month, you know, like in France, they have really good, people just take time off, you know, it's a really nice way of living, honestly. I think it's just someone that understands it's not easy. It's for sure. It's not easy because sometimes like things come up and, you just have work on your mind, you know, some it's hard sometimes to remove work off your mind. So you just need someone that understands that. I don't think Lori would continue dating me if I continued to always just like put work as the number one priority, which
yeah,
I did for a very long time. And I think that's maybe a reason why like some of the past relationships haven't worked out. But I think more and more I'm starting to put more of an emphasis on personal life. Because I realized that that's a big contributor to my happiness as well. So she's actually noticed that I've been working less and less since we met.
That's awesome.
Yeah, but you know, not just like, once again, it's like work less on work, but maybe work more on other things, you know? Mm. Yeah. Yeah, what about you? Are you dating or have any relationships?
Not right now. So for me, my greatest love was Pollyanna for the first few years, so since 2016. Yeah, and so, I think now I'm getting a little bit more into it, especially now that I'm moving over to San Diego, but mm-hmm. we'll see. Like I'm trying to set clear boundaries for myself in my own life. Like in the morning for first 2-3 hours, I work out, I meditate, I just have space for myself. Then I work for 8, 9, 10 hours. And afterwards, I try to spend time with friends or, go on a date if I can. And nice. So, yeah, right now I'm trying to get this balance because I agree. For the longest time, I was super stressed out just because it was all work. But I feel a lot happier now that it's not as much. So I think I share that with you. But no long term relationship right now.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I'll just make sure to always have a priority on your personal life. Work is really important, but find time to unwind, spend time with friends. I think that's really important.
Love that. Do you have any like top personal development books on your list?
I've just read so many, dude, over the years. I probably have read all the main the main ones. Like, I think How to Win Friends and Influence People is always a good book. I just reread it actually. I skipped over some of the stories, become repetitive after a while, but like, yeah. I just read the main points. I think that's always great. I think, I've just read a lot, honestly. And I think you get like a little bit from each one. Like usually I remember one main point from each book, you know, or like Extreme Accountability. He's like a Navy SEAL guy. And I just learned about being responsible, not making excuses, being extremely accountable to anything. Like if anything's wrong, it's my fault. And I first start it as my fault. If someone else made a mistake, I'm like, okay, first of all, why did that person make that mistake? Maybe I didn't hire the right person. Maybe I didn't train the person correctly. I always first look to myself as the problem and take responsibility for it. And then like, for example, Deep Work, I believe it's written by Cam Newton or someone, I don't know, but like, that's a good book about just like having time blocks to focus on like, you know, really important tasks that's undisturbed. Another book called The One Thing, focusing on like the one most important thing per day rather than like a bunch of other stuff, you know, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. But I think at some point, once you've read so many, I think also it's just like, you gotta build life experience too. You know, like I think life experience is extremely invaluable and stuff that you're not gonna learn from a book.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I have some friends who are just reading. And I'm like, bro, like you just start getting into it and you'll learn so much. I see just life experience.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of really good acting books. I actually learned a lot from like acting, but I think you just have to challenge yourself and put yourself in like, you know, if you're in San Diego, I don't know if you've ever done improv, go join an improv group, like an improv class. That's going to make you amazing at sales. It's going to make you amazing at listening to other people, at reacting, listening and reacting. I mean, like do stuff like that because that's like, it's new experiences or start doing jujitsu, you know, do something that challenges you, puts you out of your comfort zone.
I love that. I've only done one improv class and it was quite fun, but I haven't done it as a regular practice, so I will try that when I go to San Diego.
Or an acting class. There's good ones in San Diego. Do an acting class. I mean, like, everything just puts you out of your comfort zone, and that allows you to grow. And ultimately, that allowing you to grow allows you to be a better leader of other people. It allows you to be more confident. And also, I think sales, the most important thing is relationship. So yeah. Acting and improv, it's all about listening and the relationships.
I love that.
But just put yourself out of your comfort zone.
Okay. Are you doing anything with acting now? Do you have plans to make it back to Hollywood and, I don't know, like be in a movie or something? Or like what's the plans on that?
Man, like that? It doesn't interest me that much anymore. Nothing against actors. I think it's a nice job and it's a nice living. I interview actors all the time. It's just kind of not my area. Anymore. I do involve, you know, I just started a TikTok account, started making digital marketing tips on TikTok, which is pretty exciting. Not any dancing videos, but like, I think it's a great.
Oh, come on. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a great platform. Honestly, I think it's the future. It's super engaging. It's great audiences on there.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, man, I mean, that's, you know, other creative pursuits. I think the podcast for sure, writing, you know, just finding time to do a lot of things.
Love that.
Yeah. What about you? Are you,
One hobby I've picked up during quarantine is the ukulele. So I used to play guitar when I was in high school for, I think it was like 4 years. But then after, you know, when I went to the Naval Academy and then I was just professional, I just lost touch with my musical side. And so I started playing the ukulele at the start of quarantine. And I actually did an open mic a few weeks back just to make myself improve very quickly. And so I played Chivalry's Dead by Trevor Wesley. And I got a really, really positive response for that. So that's been my hobby for quarantine. I'm playing some tennis as well. That's what I've been doing in terms of hobby wise.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that's good. Yeah. Tennis is fun, man. I love sports.
Are you good at tennis?
No, I'm terrible, but I like sports. I like to play.
Awesome. So you said you do jiu-jitsu, so I'm guessing, or do you do that, or do you just...
I used to when I had a gym, but I don't have it now. Mostly just CrossFit, I think. For any entrepreneur, I think CrossFit is one of the best ones that you can do, or jiu-jitsu, because anything where essentially you cannot have your phone in your hand is one of the best things I'd recommend. Because like, you know, when you look at your phone, it's hard not to look at your phone. And the biggest thing for me is to reset and refresh is like to get out of work mode is to not look at my phone. Because when I look at my phone, I get sucked in. And CrossFit is like an hour where you're just sweating, thinking of nothing, but like trying to like just do the next rep. And it's incredible. It's incredibly therapeutic and addicting.
I love it. I'm going to have to get some CrossFit WODs in.
Yeah. CrossFit's awesome, man. So, awesome. But yeah, dude, I mean, overall, that's it. I think I just think like, you know, with the agency and stuff, like just make sure that you continue to grow personally in your personal life and find a better sales process.
Yeah. I'm down with it. And yeah, I want to say, I know that we're running up to 3 p.m., but yeah, thanks, man, for all the advice too. Like, dude, I got so many notes here. And I think that with all this information, I'm going to make a few decisions that will get me to the 1 million. Because I've just really been trying to figure out what's next. And I think just directing my resources and decisions a lot better is going to help us get there. So fingers crossed. I'm hoping this year or next year.
Yeah, you need to take some time to take a step back and just look at kind of what you're doing, where you're spending your time. Because like, I think for us, I think I had a year where I did 300K and then 400K the next year, where there wasn't, like usually growth and revenue is inversely correlated, growth and profit, sorry. So, you know, because you're investing, you're making less, but you're setting up for the future. So like the revenue will grow as long as you're taking the right lead measures, the right. Another good book is The Four Disciplines of Execution, I believe. There's a lot of good business books. Scaling Up is a good book. I believe it's called Scaling Up, but there's a lot of good business books out there as well. Principles. Yeah.
Okay. four principles and scaling up. I haven't read it. That's by Vernon Harnish or something.
Yeah, I think so. It's really good. I mean, you know, I take everything with a grain of salt. Like some of that stuff is applicable for a bigger company, but like, you know, you're going to get some nuggets that you can apply.
Okay. Let me write this down. Hell yeah. I got some books to read now. I got how many of this? There's seven of them. So I'm going to dig in.
Yeah. No, just, yeah, find the time to read. Obviously, that's really important. I probably learned a lot, most of the stuff through reading. Oh, check out the Agency Management Institute podcast. It's all like agency founders and entrepreneurs that start agencies or related to agencies. It's a really great resource. You might even want to join their community. I don't know how good it is, but I know the emails that Drew McLellan or whatever his name is sends out are really good. It's like agency owner support group.
Okay, agency owner support group.
Yeah, Agency Management Institute, AMI.
AMI, okay. Agency Management Institute.
Yeah, it's really good. So yeah, man, well, keep me posted. You know, reach out to me, email me, you know, happy to help whenever, dude.
Thank you, man. I really appreciate it because I know you're really busy. And again, you're kind of like the dream. Like you're where I want to be a few years from now. So I really appreciate the time. And also just fielding all my personal questions too.
Yeah, no worries. I'm really happy to help. And hopefully, hopefully you'll make some of the adjustments and I think you'll definitely see some results. Just be patient. You know, like I said, I didn't grow them. I went from 300K to 400K over 2 years. Like I was not like, you know, but I was just building everything out. And then suddenly like we started to skyrocket in revenue.
Dude, that's crazy. Fingers crossed. That's so exciting.
You'll get there.
Awesome, man. Cool. So I'll let you go. Yeah, if there's anything you need from me as well, I'll always feel free to reach out. Yeah, I know we're working on some stuff as well. Yep. So hopefully that goes well. And I'm pretty sure things are going to go smoothly. So I think it should close.
Cool. So. All right, man. All right. Well, thanks, John.
All right. Thanks, Dominic. Take care, man.
Okay.
Thank you so much, John, for coming onto the show. And thank you for all you listeners for tuning into this week's episode. If you want to check out some more of our content, you can go to whyyouknowdoctor.com/podcast. Of course, if you ever have feedback, suggestions, or anything else, just reach out to me at Dominic@whyyouknowdoctor.com. Anyways, see you all next time. Thank you.